Do you know what the difference is between Adolf Hitler and Al Capone? Hitler's dead. Capone lives like a king in Florida.
He has full-blown dementia.
I have reason to believe it could all be an elaborate act.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon, sponsored by Tommy John. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Sonny Budge, Jonathan V. Last. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Look at our podcast and search for Subbeacon. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. Gentlemen, how are we? I want to start with JVL.
Yeah.
You're back in the closet.
Yeah. That's right.
Go, why don't you elaborate for everybody?
I'm
what's
back
happening
in the closet, and I'm just pounding these guys.
Oh, is that the peach, spritzers?
Peach
these are
and
honeysuckle. Oh, wow. That must have almost 2% alcohol in it.
No, I've been drinking these since 4 o'clock this afternoon, and I believe that this is 55% by volume. It says it right here. 55% alcohol by volume.
I don't think that's right.
No.
You mean it's 110 proof?
Oh, 5.5%. Sorry.
Well, that's still.
Did I mention I've been drinking these since 4?
That's more than a. That's more than.
You're a wild man. You are a wild man. That's right.
It's great. It's great. 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 How are you guys?
We're doing well. You also forget about button down shirts, JVL. How about just t-shirt? You are now permanently in tank tops.
And you know, the truth is, I only put them on for you guys most of the time. I just walk around shirtless. Like I just like I embrace
thank
it all.
Thank you for allowing us that. Do you want to elaborate where you are, why you're in the closet, why you're back in the closet?
Down. We're down in North Carolina at our little place, the beach, where we had to get it ready for the summer rental season, which everybody down here is pretending is still going to happen. And, you know, I have to say, here in the real America, ain't nobody acting like there's no pandemic nowhere.
Oh, yeah. And I was looking at the map, and it's like the lowest number of cases. So yeah. You might as well just go crazy.
And that's great because this little patch of the North Carolina is about to be getting 10,000 visitors per week, mostly from the D.C., Raleigh, and New Jersey areas.
New Jersey
is primarily where they draw from.
I'm surprised New Jersey.
I hope they have excellent luck. Because, again, down here, they think that masks are for pussies. And, you know, like, everybody's just
that's how I feel.
Doing their own thing. That's great.
I do think that...
Did you ever take fluid dynamics, Victorino?
No, didn't need to. And I'm still here. And I still feel great. Go ahead, Sonny. Sonny, you're inside.
Well, I was going to say, it actually, you know, in theory, you go to the beach... Outdoors in the sun, that's fine. You got
that's
all
great.
The people.
The outdoor stuff is great.
People living in there.
Sunlight is good.
People living in their homes with each other that, you know, they all travel down together with. It should be fine. You'll be fine. Everything will
be
all right.
Well, I won't be here after another week, so I'll be fine when I'm back in my fortress of solitude.
Do you do Airbnb? Is that how you...
No.
You rent it every...
No.
Just
no.
On your own.
There is a we don't do it on our own because that would be an enormous amount of work. There are essentially two companies on the island which handle 99% of the rentals. They are Pepsi and Coke. We go with Coke, and it is a turnkey operation. I don't do anything except come and deal with the damage at the end of every rental season, because people will just, it amazes me the things that people will do. So we've had people take like stereo systems, Roku boxes, DVD players, just like take them. Imagine renting a house and be like, hey, I really like the stereo here. I'm just going to take it with me.
I can't do that. Are you saying that that's not allowed?
No, but can you even believe that this is a thing that people do?
Would be one. It's one thing if it's like they take home some towels, like you accidentally, you know,
or
accidentally.
A book. Right, you know, like yeah. We have a bookshelves with a little note and, you know, DVD shelf being like, hey, if you see something you really like, just take it with you. You know, you don't have to leave these things
a
here.
A book. You know, in the like if you...
Like a Roku player who's like, hey, you know what? This streaming stuff is really cool. I didn't know they had these Roku players. I'm just going to here. Let me just, you know, disconnect it from the HDMI.
I always felt bad for taking the towel.
It's I mean, look, it's
offensive.
Let's give people the benefit of the doubt here and say like, oh, they can't remember what they brought and what they didn't bring. And,
electronics.
Know,
they didn't bring the electronics.
They tell the kids like, oh, go grab all the things, make sure we have everything, and they grab and they bring it. You know, it happens.
I forgot I didn't pack the flat screen.
Yeah,
the TV. Right. They walked off with the TV.
This is my 60-inch plasma.
I thought that's part of the deal. You know, you could keep your soaps. You could take soaps with you.
Anyway, so it's great. I love it down here.
So you're scheduled. You have people. You have people you don't know yet.
Still have people, okay. But I imagine some percentage of them are going to cancel. I certainly would cancel if I were them. I would not be coming down to this Petri dish. But it'll be great. And we'll be back in August, and we will have our August down here. And I'm looking forward to that already.
I'm surprised, you know, the New Jersey people going down there, but that's because all the New York people come to New Jersey. You know how that works.
No, that's exactly right. Yeah, no, mm-hmm. Exactly. But, you know, because those New York beaches are going to look like. My aunt in Belmar was telling me what their protocols are, and it sounds insane.
Are they checking driver's licenses? Because my friends, Sue and Rich, they live up there in Bradley Beach. That's just up the road.
So what the way for people who don't understand is in the Jersey Shore, the beach is a real big moneymaker. Not just the actual like businesses around the beach, but the beach itself. Because what they do is all these towns charge people to go to the beach. And if you are a town resident, you will get a beach tag or two beach tags or however many you pay for that are good for the summer. And everybody else has to buy passes just to get onto the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a source of enormous revenue. And there's a lot, you know, they're literally like at every entrance, there's a
little kiosk
sitting there watching the checking. Let me see your beach ticket.
I'd love that job. I could do that job, by the way.
So what they're doing for this year
is changing it.
And they're saying... They're saying no masks on the beach. You don't have to wear a mask on the beach.
Good.
However, the minute you come off the beach, you got to put a mask on. So even if you're going to the bathrooms, and you got to have a mask in the public bathrooms, and they're going to have...
Belmar. I'm sorry. You were talking about Belmar.
This is Belmar, but I believe this is all of the central Jersey beach towns. Right?
So this way you just go in the ocean. You just
That's right, Sonny.
Well, but also they're going to have people roaming the beach... Like, you tell me you're not 6 feet apart because you're going to have social distance. And you have to understand, on the Jersey Shore, people are packed onto the sand like sardines. I mean, you know what it's like, Vic.
I don't go to certain beaches precisely. Even pre-coronavirus, like, if you went, I would never go to, like, you know, the beach at Seaside. You know? It's insane. It's gross.
But people, and they're all from New York. They come down. The Bennies, right, Victoria?
The Bennies. The Bennies come down. I mean, that's the whole thing about Jersey Shore was they were all from New York.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm yelling.
So, how this is going to work in reality with like the nice, you know, 85-year-old New Jersey lady yelling at the 17 or 25-year-old New Yorker, put your mask on. No, you put your mask on. Gabagool, you know, or whatever.
That was gratuitous. The Gabagool. And I got some recently, some Boar's Head Gabagool. And Kate said, oh, who bought this Capicolo?
Thank you.
Anyway.
You know, can I say, I bought, this is actually segue to something I was going to ask you about, Victorino.
Oh.
Because I would like to ask you about your people.
Yeah.
Sing us the song of your people.
Which people are those?
I purchased a pizza pie from the pizza shop down here in North Carolina.
Okay, in North Carolina.
And it is
the
largest pizza I've ever been able to order. The thing is so big
it's an extra large.
It's so big that I can only fit it in the trunk of my car. I can't fit it in the doors.
Yeah.
But I noticed looking at the top of the pizza box, it's got a little pictorial representation of the people who made it for me. And they've got these big mustaches.
Oh, and is he flipping a pie? Is he flipping a pie? So good. What does it say? So good. I love reading
so
pizza boxes.
So good, made a special for you. And I thought to myself, is this allowed?
Because you wouldn't have it for Chinese.
Chinese, would you have a...
It depends on who designed it.
A pictorial representation with distinctive facial markings, with some sort of broken English, like, you know, hey, we make egg roll for you.
You know, we
that
went
would be
to,
frowned upon.
You know, when we were thank you, Sonny. Thank you.
I may have to bleep that.
That's from a Christmas
story. It's a Christmas story. It's a movie reference.
Come on.
Victorino, do your people find this offensive?
That is my question. No, I don't think so. It just is what it is. It is what it is. The last time I was in Jersey, we went to our local pizza place to bring pizza back to the house to surprise my folks. And then we were waiting there, and the guys were working, the old man, young man, you know, a bunch of workers. They're all speaking Italian, interjected with the only English word would be the F-bomb. And my kids would hear that, you know, and it would be Italian F, you know, and somebody complaining about making wings. No, I don't.
You got the mozzarella fonts?
What's that? Do you remember the Polio string cheese commercial? Look that up from the 80s.
No.
Do you remember the one where they go and it goes, hey, give me a pizza with nothing on it. Nothing? And then, and there was three kids, and the one says, bellissimo. But then the other two kids go, magnifique. And then the third one goes, c'est bon. What's French? For a pizza place, made no sense. But look it up on YouTube, Polio String Cheese 1980s commercial. It's a classic. Sonny.
That's all. How are you boys doing?
Yeah, Sonny, where are you?
I had to go inside today. Apparently, the neighbors across the alley. So there's like an alley behind my house where the garages are. Apparently, the neighbors are having a party. The lockdown's over here in Dallas, man. Nobody gives a crap about this anymore. Mm-hmm.
Did you go over later on? Hey, what's going on?
I should just take over my flask of Weller, which is what I'm drinking out of right now.
Stitzer Weller, yes. Very nice.
It's funny. It's interesting. Here in Dallas, it's much easier to get the Buffalo Trace distilled liquors than it was in Virginia or in D.C.
Virginia is an obvious reason, right? I mean, it's a Soviet system.
Right, Virginia has a Soviet system that's no good. But in Dallas, man,
great.
It's weird. I don't really want to go like super into detail into like my drinking habits, but I'm drinking a lot now. And I've always been a big fan of Buffalo Trace, but Buffalo Trace became almost impossible to find after the Pappy Van Winkle craze kicked in for a variety of reasons. You know, people realized that the Old Weller Antique, which is distilled by Buffalo Trace, was essentially the young version of Pappy Van Winkle. So it disappeared almost immediately. And then Buffalo Trace itself, which is like kind of a distant relative of the Pappy Van Winkle, became very hard to find, but very, very affordable, like totally reasonably priced. So in Virginia, it's extremely hard to get a hold of. And I hadn't really had much luck in Dallas either until like a month ago. I found there was just a shelf of it at the Specs. Oh. The Specs is basically the Total Wine of Dallas. And I bought like 3 liters. They didn't have handles, but they had the liters. I just bought like 3 bottles.
That's heavy.
So anyway, and then I found another place that had Buffalo Trace just last week. So I'm like, I'm in heaven.
I love even the ABC stores in Virginia. I like going in. It's like being a kid in a candy shop or a toy store.
Yeah,
it's very exciting.
But the problem is they are the ABC stores.
The selection is predictable.
The selection's not very good, and it's just crap. Yeah, yeah. I really like what we have here in Dallas, and I prefer the DC liquor store.
Oh, DC had some great Calvert Woodley. I mean, there was exactly.
So anyway, I'll wander over there with my Weller.
Do they sell barefoot
Weller
spritzers?
I would assume so.
Because that's all I really care about. If they have those,
is it part of the barefoot wine?
You're stepping up.
Company?
You're stepping up from the Shuffer Huffer to the barefoot spritzer.
Don't forget my Kirkland Irish County Cream.
It's more like a sidestep.
The Zima.
Something like that.
So anyway.
Sonny, you gave us you gave us that piece. We could talk about it now from the Hollywood Reporter about casinos.
Why don't we save that for later? We'll do that in a little bit.
Okay.
I wanted to say thank you to a very good friend, a very loyal Subbeacon listener, Chris M. I don't want to say his full name. I don't want to blow up his whole spot. But I got a package in the mail from him last week, middle of last week. And it was like a carton of Hawaiian shaved ice syrups. And I was like, I sent him a text. I was like, hey, thanks for sending these. And he was like, oh wait, did the shaved ice machine come? So he for a housewarming gift, he bought a very nice ice shaving, Hawaiian ice shaving. Oh, I don't know what you call it. I don't know what the actual.
How big is the machine?
Oh, it's not that big. It's like it's the size. It's probably a little bigger than a blender.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, you put it on your. Yeah. I've seen it.
But
that's great.
But it was extremely nice of him. And I was like, thanks for sending this. And he was like, yeah, you sounded so depressed on the Subbeacon last week that I thought the only way to make you feel better was to send you liquid sugar to feed your children. Like, that will make all of your problems.
It's also fun. It's also fun to do. It's fun to do. It makes a great sound.
And it's going
to
be 110 degrees here in like a month. So, you know, I need something. So anyway, Chris, thank you. Cheers to you.
Cheers to you.
Thank you very much. That was very, oh my goodness. JBL just cracked open another one to celebrate.
This one's for you, Chris.
So anyway, thank you to my good friend, Chris. I feel much less depressed now.
I was going to say, better or less depressed?
I have the Hawaiian shaved. No, I'm going to be 100% honest with you. I trimmed my beard and I feel I feel so much like cleaner and more energetic. Mm-hmm.
No, you were looking like who was the bad guy in The Remnant? Tom Hardy? Oh, speaking of which, no, we're not there yet. Sorry.
We're not quite there.
You were talking about masks earlier. And I have to tell you a little bit of an insane story of my experience. So I finally, Kate made me a mask. What she did was she took the hammock in the backyard and she just put it around my ears. Somebody asked me, oh, that's a really great mask. It's like made from like one of my son's old shirts or something like that, the whole shirt. And the lady said, well, how did your wife know like how big to make? I go, well, she knows I have a very large head. So, it goes around and it's gray. It's fine. So it's okay. You know, I hate wearing it, but I put it on because it makes other people feel at ease. I don't mind when I see other people who look healthy, not old people, but other people who look healthy without the mask. I don't have a problem with that. But anyway, I had to go in to a Safeway. I don't even go to Safeway, but it was on the way. I just forgot I had to pick up coffee. So I said, let me just go really quickly into the. There's hardly anybody there. It was like, you know, mid-morning or whatever. It was late, almost noon. So I go in, and I said, let me just go down the aisle to pick up a bag of coffee, anything. Just, you know, I had gotten the Café du Monde with the chicory, and she does not like that. So I had to just get regular Pete's, anything. So I said, okay, let me get that. There are arrows in the aisles, but not in every supermarket. So the supermarket we normally go to doesn't matter which way, but this particular Safeway, which is not small, has arrows, but there's nobody there. So I said, I'm going up this aisle, even though.
Oh, you're
says,
the guy who went the wrong way up
right.
the aisle.
So I go up there. Jeez. And I find the bag, and it's like,
I know who you voted for in 2016.
You got it. And it said, oh wait, it's whole bean. So I said, oh, I think the ground coffee is like 10 feet back. I turn, take two steps, and there's a guy who is turned onto the aisle and sees me. He's wearing a mask. I'm wearing a mask. He looks at me. He goes, no, stop. You're going the wrong way. I said, what? He goes, you can't go back. I just go, no, you're moving backwards. Panic. And I just looked at him. I said, okay. So I will go all the way around to go right 2 feet behind me. Really? I can't go 2 feet, two steps? I can't. No. You moved an inch. Move forward. You must move forward. And so I went all the way around and I went right behind him and grabbed him and said, excuse me.
And then you licked his face.
Yeah, pretty much. People have lost their minds.
And licked his face.
People have lost their minds. What is this, East Germany?
Can I complain?
Tyler Cowen had a very good post about there's a epidemiological reason to do things. There's a political reason to do things. And then there's just how much the people will put up with. And I think we have found Vic's breaking point. He will not be told which way to walk down.
There were two people in the frigging aisle. There were two people, me and him. He just turned in and he sees me take two steps back and is, I can't do it. Must report you.
So this is, as you guys know, I have been typically a catastrophist about
all of this stuff, as
is my wont.
Yeah.
And what drives me crazy is that if you take all of this stuff seriously, then you want to not do shit like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because what you want to do is get, you know, look, you can't cut everybody's contacts down to zero. But what, you know, if you take the pie chart of the number of contacts you have on a daily basis, you'd like to shave that down by, say, 80%, right? And you can do the first 60 or 50% actually pretty seamlessly without causing much harm. And then it is to try to, you know, then whittle away until you get to the point where the inconvenience of removing the next 5% is actually, once it gets big, that's where you stop.
Yeah.
Because what you want, it would be better to have people reduce their contacts by 80% for 12 weeks than reduce it by 90% for 6 weeks because they've stopped being able to put up with it.
Yeah.
And this sort of, you know, what's funny is that the state and local the state and federal government have been pretty good about this stuff, but it winds up being like the local governments that are insane
and dictatorial about this. That is exactly right. It is.
And then private people. So I see this all the time. You know, you see, like, there will be the guy who proudly is not wearing a mask who goes the wrong way up the aisle, and I see people getting upset about it. What I want to say is, why are you getting upset? This is the whole idea. Again, if 80% of the people are following the different protocols, then that is the point, right? The idea isn't to get 100% compliance.
No, that's right. That's right.
Right? Who cares? Let it go. This is not, you know, it's not worth getting mashuga over.
You know what I say? It is not worth getting your panties in a bunch. Speaking of which, at the top of the show, I mentioned we have a new sponsor. It's Tommy John. The problem is I have not worn it, and I know my co-hosts haven't, but somebody we know has and loves it. No, not him. I am talking about, thank you, our good friend and former producer or sometime producer, Paul Crookston. That's right, the Subbeacon's very own Oliver, cousin Oliver. And we are actually thrilled to have him back on the show to talk about Tommy John. Paul, welcome back. Take it away.
Hey, Vic, it's good to be back. I'm here to talk about something I always thought I'd be great at selling, but I had imagined a more visual medium than a podcast. That is, of course, Tommy John, a product I know and love. Working from home used to be the fantasy of every professional, but it turns out it's not that comfortable. Unless you're wearing Tommy John. All that sitting down, standing up, answering the door, answering emails, picking up kids' toys, or putting down the dog's bowl takes its toll on your layers. Thankfully, Tommy John knows life has its ups and downs, so they've improved their men's underwear, making it more resilient to wear and tear. It's now 2 times more durable. It's still soft and super breathable, but now even more reliable and comfortable. And right now, when you shop the Tommy John Memorial Day sale, you get up to 30% off site-wide. So treat yourself and upgrade to a few pairs of Tommy John underwear in the softest, most breathable fabrics you've ever worn. Tommy John obsesses over every little detail and stitch by using proprietary fabrics that perform like nothing you have ever worn before. All of Tommy John's loungewear and leggings are built for next-level comfort. Whether you're hunting for lounge pants, sleep shorts, or lazing around joggers, Tommy John has you covered. Their underwear comes with a no-wedgie guarantee. They've eliminated visible panty lines for women, which my lady friends tell me is a big deal. And their quick-draw fly has been proven to save men over 217 minutes of unfurling per year. That's a fact, boys. Look it up. Tommy John is so confident in their underwear that if you don't love your first pair, you can get a full refund with their best pair you'll ever wear or it's free guarantee. Tommy John, no adjustment needed. So, shop the Memorial Day sale at TommyJohn.com and get up to 30% off site-wide with the code SUBBEACON. No space or hyphen and all caps. That's SUBBEACON, SUBBEACON, for 30% off site-wide at TommyJohn.com. See site for details.
Thank
That's
you,
SUBBEACON.
Paul.
Back to you guys.
He sounded so suave, didn't he? I tell you, that voice was so mellow. Ladies, you're going to have to order 2 pairs of... I'm sorry. I wrote that down. But I hope you look at you. You're both speechless. Sonny, oh, I got a smile from Sonny. I messed up the line. Okay. After listening to that, you better make your order a double. Okay. See, that was better. That was better. I hope you appreciate. Jonathan doesn't want to say anything. I hope you appreciate. I deleted two words from that particular line in the script. One of the words was flooded. Okay.
Oh, I thought it was one of the words was ended.
Thank you.
Double.
Oh, no. I'm like, whew. Okay. Thank you, Paul. No, that was really good. You know, I actually saw Paul on Zoom not long ago, and he has now grown, if you can imagine this, a mustache and goatee.
That sounds about right.
Yep. Paul?
Yeah. I can see that. Yeah.
That's what I said. I'm sure a lot of people have said that then. And
he's 12.
I know he is, the only thing he was missing was a beret, and he looked very French, like a French artist, or the kind of guy you'd want to go up to and see if you can score some meth.
Like a Wes Anderson character. I imagine
he is Steve Zissou's biographer.
Totally. I can see that. I bet it's a good look for him.
You know what, though? People are going to love this, and they're going to order because he does this very well. So, again, thank you, Paul. Now,
we should have him do all our ad reads.
I'd be all for that, by the way. It just takes a load off from me. And, okay, I have a really bad transition coming up here. Ready?
All right.
Okay. Okay, moving along from Tommy.
Transition.
Here we go. Moving along from Tommy John to Tommy Guns. This week, we decided to watch the movie Capone, starring Tom Hardy. Mm. Yeah, see, Tommy Guns. I'm still reading the script. I love gangster movies, and I love Tom Hardy. What could possibly go wrong? Oof. Sonny.
Everything, apparently. This is one of... I wouldn't say it's the worst movie I've seen in a long time.
It's
because I saw the Black Christmas remake, and that was pretty terrible. That's its own like special brand of terrible. But this was bad, and it called to mind a conversation we were having last week about Flash Gordon. So last week when we were talking about Flash Gordon, I am very strenuously in favor of the idea that you cannot make intentional camp. That camp only comes about when you earnestly try to make something that is good. And in your efforts, you make something that is so bad that it leaves kind of a special mark on the world,
like Showgirls.
The badness of it combined with the earnestness of it creates a sort of black hole of fascination. And that is, I think, what has happened with Capone. I think Capone is actually camp. Just starting with first and foremost, and most obviously, the performance by Tom Hardy, which he puts everything into. Every grunt you believe is a like thought out method grunt. Every shitting of the bed or peeing of the pants is like a is a conspicuous idea that is meant to convey some sort of meaning or emotion. The ghosts are all supposed to be very meaningful. The boy with the balloon represents lost innocence and, you know, whatever. And it's all bad. It's everything about this movie is bad. It looks okay. I mean, like it is competently shot, I guess. And it has a nice setting, the kind of Florida mansion right off the swamps with the gators and blah blah blah. But it's bad on pretty much every level. The performances are weird and unconvincing, but very earnest. Kyle MacLachlan, I believe my friend Alyssa Rosenberg on another podcast described him as Bugs Bunny chewing on that carrot, trying to, you know, replace the cigar in Capone's mouth. But also just narratively, the movie's a mess. You know, there's a title card at the beginning that says, "This is the last year of Al Capone's life." That's what we're watching here. And fine, and he has syphilitic dementia. He is, his mind is not there. He's hopping through time, you know. But the problem with this is that the movie breaks its own rules in certain very annoying ways. For instance, there's a character who's played by
Matt Dillon.
I
know exactly what you're going to say.
So there's a character who's played in this movie by Matt Dillon, And spoiler alert, it turns out that he's not actually there. And at a certain point, you see Capone say to his wife, you know, get more bourbon for my friend here. And the camera moves and it's an empty chair. Oh, whoa. Except, but there's no, the language of the film does not allow for that explanation to work, because yes, we see Matt Dillon's character introduced off screen via a phone call in a totally, it would be like if you took Lloyd the bartender from The Shining, right? You know, Lloyd, and Jack Nicholson is there, and then Lloyd appears. But it would be like introducing Lloyd 10 minutes earlier via a cutaway shot where Lloyd's like, well, I got to get ready for my gig at the bar at the Overlook. And then he's there, and then it turns out he's a ghost. So the movie betrays itself,
yes,
in sloppy ways that I cannot abide. I can abide a certain amount of nonsense, but I can't abide internal inconsistency and laziness and sloppiness like this. I hated this movie. I found myself laughing at things that may have been intentional and may have been unintentional. I don't know. Nothing about it worked. And what I resent the most is that I know for a fact that within 5 years there will be a cult surrounding this movie of people who are defending it to the bone, as JVL is probably about to do right now. JVL, no. what did you make of it?
You know, I read a review of this flick on some artsy fartsy film site, in which they talk very seriously about how this film site may have been made by Josh Trank's mother, but about how the Fantastic Four is actually the best comic book movie of the last two decades.
I saw the headline and I wanted to get back because I said I saw this comparison.
Who wrote it?
I couldn't tell you, but something like, it wasn't Film Threat, but something like Film Threat. And how that this thing is really a masterpiece that is way better than The Dark Knight Rises. Okay. Who cares what I think? Vic?
Well, you have a show. People want to know.
For me?
Yes.
This is a horror movie.
Yeah, well.
Because it's about your life.
We're the same age, and we're pretty much the same physically. Internally, we've all had those. Hey, come on. Who among us hasn't had that happen in bed, huh? Come on.
Literally, the only thing I could think of the entire time I was going through this was that Linda Cardellini could have been played by Kate Mattis.
Right. Once you hear the fly, you know something bad. I hear the fly. Like, oh, no.
This guy who is doddering.
She's
got to
take care of me. She's got to take care of me.
You know, he's got a very large head.
Just go.
He's got physical
ailments. Just go upstairs. Too much shrimp. You had too much shrimp, everybody. You had too much shrimp. Yeah.
When did you sign away your life rights for the film? Or is it that you wouldn't sign your life rights,
right,
and so they
and
had
so
to
they
make
had
the
to
story around
quote
Capone?
Quote Al Capone. But in fact, it was my last year. It was my last year before I left this earth. I was going to.
So how did this movie make you feel?
Majorly. Okay. Well, again, I was so fascinated because, you know, it's like Al Capone was born in 1899, mm-hmm, and this is 1947.
Yeah, he's 40 when he gets out.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, obviously, I don't have as much experience with neurosyphilis as he does, that's not the same. It's not the same. Obviously that has some impact on him. I had to struggle with this movie in terms of accepting his physical condition the way I liked, in a weird way, this Paul Giamatti movie called Barney's Version. I don't know if you ever saw that. And at the end of it, spoiler alert, I think he has like Alzheimer's or something, but he's young. So it's like, you know, a young person having that condition, it's, you know, hard to wrap your mind around that, it, you know, and does it work? So that was one problem, but I was overall thoroughly disappointed. It's the most disappointed, I think, since I saw Widows, really. I would say, in terms of, you know what, do you know what's not on my quadrants? Loss of bowel control. That is not on my quadrants. I was like, oh, got an A+ for that. So that was really, a disappointment. You know what it struck me as? I watched this movie, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, wait a minute, it's in his mind. I was like, this is like watching that Meryl Streep movie, The Iron Lady, about Margaret Thatcher, you know, and Dennis Thatcher's appearing, but nobody can see him, you know, and it's the same thing with Matt Dillon. It's the same thing, and it's not what I wanted. I was hoping there'd be more flashbacks. Sure, he'd have to have some sort of, you know, personal moral reckoning and things like that, but... it was just a little bit.
Does he actually have that
in
this movie?
No, because it's unclear. Here's the thing. I was hoping.
There's no actual moral calculus here. There's no like discussion of, you know, the tagline on this movie is that eventually, you know, crime, everyone pays for their crimes or something.
Oh,
like
is that what it?
Well, and that's just not, that's not, no, what the movie's about at all. That's, mm-hmm, that's not, there's no, even the Matt Dillon character, like, tries to give him a pass, mm-hmm, on, you know, having to have him whacked. And I,
for skimming,
the whole flashbacks to the childhood and the whole, like, oh, look, he's a, mm-hmm, child in, mm-hmm, Italy. Mm-hmm. And I just, everything about this movie,
I was so disappointed. I want, you know, I'm interested in, I've always been interested in Al Capone, you know, and when he came over from New York, and then he joined with, you know, and I thought, oh, maybe there'll be a whole thing with him, you know, when, you know, with working with Johnny Torrio, and he was part of that gang, and then he took over for Torrio, and then the Valentine's Day Massacre, and he was going up against Bugs Moran and the whole thing, and I, like, you know, I mean, I went to the Al Capone Animatronic Museum in Chicago with Matt Labash back in 1996. And it was ridiculous. It was corny, but it was great, you know? And so I've been, you know,
was it like the Hall of Presidents?
It's like the Hall of Presidents. He was an animatronic Al, and he's got that fake voice, and he's got the Tommy gun and the whole thing. It's great. It's no longer there. So I went to
the Museum of Crime and Punishment in DC.
I always wanted to do that, and I never did.
It was the worst. It was the worst museum I've ever been to in my entire life.
I went to it
once, just because we had nothing to do.
Yeah, it's like near Gallery Place,
and it was expensive too. It was like $30 or something to get it. It was insane. But they had a mock-up of Al Capone's cell in Alcatraz.
He had like
a Barca lounger and like a little fireplace. You know, mm-hmm, he really had it made. Mm-hmm. He really had it made.
No, he did
on the rock.
He did. You know what is what's really interesting is the FBI used to give tours. And when I had, after I interned at Justice Department, I had got one of these little tours in there. But they got like John Dillinger's death mask and stuff like that. Really cool stuff. And I would say one of the best tours I've ever been to in my entire life was Alcatraz.
That's a good one.
The audio, if you got to do the audio. And you're,
when
you,
got,
you know, they put,
when you got locked in the cell.
They put you in the hole.
Ed Harris came out. Like,
he
I
was
need
the
you
good,
to
wasn't he? He's
everybody
the good,
be.
He's the good guy in that movie, I think. He was the good guy.
He had a point.
He did. But were you annoyed, Sonny, about, there are moments where I thought, ugh, this is like The Shining. This is like The Shining. They're trying to be
100%.
Like The Shining.
No, right? No, no. It's 100. It is.
Not an homage.
Well, I think it might be, though. I think it might be slightly, it's something of an homage. So this is Josh Trank. This movie is Josh Trank working out all of his personal demons and professional demons, and also like paying homage to the movies that he loved, like Wizard of Oz and The Shining. But the best way to understand this movie is it's like a shitty Shining. It's like a really terrible
You're not
going to
see that in the review. You know
put
how
that,
they do
put
the...
Put that on the fucking poster. It's a shitty Shining.
And it in small print, Sonny Bunch, Rebellion.
So the only thing I found interesting about this is the company story behind it. There are six production companies credited with it. Well, it's one of these things where
like
at the beginning
forever
of the movie, you just can't believe they keep flashing one card after another.
Yes,
with
why
Red
is that?
Box Media in a session with Alibaba Pictures in cooperation with, well, I mean, anyway. And what struck me is that this, it feels like, Capone feels like a movie out of time. By which I mean that if you wind back the clock 15 years to the heyday of Harvey Weinstein, this would have made perfect sense to me as a Miramax Oscar
Vanity
play.
Oh.
Right? So you put a big name star who hasn't won his Oscar yet in this insane over-the-top role, and then Miramax spends $80 million in for-your-consideration ads in Variety and The Hollywood Reporter and they hump it to an Oscar nomination. And then, for all we know, they win a best actor Oscar for Tom Hardy. And, you know, maybe it becomes a cult movie. Maybe it doesn't. Because Miramax just did that sort of stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And that business, I think, is gone. I don't think those types of movies really get made anymore, or really, maybe I'm wrong about this. But all, I mean, everything about this I found puzzling. Like, how did Josh Trank get out of movie jail to make this?
Yeah.
You know, like, when you're stuck in movie jail, you're stuck in movie jail.
The only thing I thought about...
You either make little pictures or you break out by doing some big thing that's really good. You don't get to do another Boondoggle.
Do we know what the budget on this was? Because it couldn't have been that expensive. Because it's basically all shot in one place.
One location, yeah.
It's not a hugely expensive movie, I don't think, outside of whatever Tom Hardy's salary is for it, and he probably took a pay cut because he got to do an accent. I don't know if you know this about Tom Hardy. I wish I had. I thought about texting you guys to see if you wanted to rank the Tom Hardy accents.
Oh,
but this is like Hall of Fame bad Tom Hardy accent. You know, I don't think it was actually that expensive. A movie, really. I just like, but you're right. They don't make this sort of movie anymore. And the studio that would make something like this is like an A24. An A24 would realize that what they have on their hands is a total piece of crap and dump it on DirecTV and not do anything with it. They would not push this for Oscar consideration.
Right. It was something, and you know, I had some weird Tom Hardy thoughts too, which is that he is a movie star. Can we agree that he's a movie star?
No.
Yeah.
No, you don't think so.
Oh. Tom Hardy is not somebody who opens a movie on his own.
Correct.
Well, what about the one with the you know, Venom?
Tom Hardy's Venom. Undoubtedly, you know what opened that was Venom. Was Sony Spider-Man universe?
He doesn't supposed. He's not supposed to resemble Spider-Man.
So this was the point I was actually going to get at, which is that he is, I believe, this weird commodity, which is he is a movie star who doesn't do big openings and even necessarily big leading man parts. You know, like he you put him like, you know, he does Bane or he does. Yeah, you know, he's this straw that stirs the drink.
Well, he's the best thing in The Revenant.
Right. So he's this star that straws the drink that stirs. Help me.
Straw
I've had too many
barefoots.
Yeah. And in a bunch of big movies where he's utterly essential and is kind of the star. Like, he is a movie. You just look at him. He is a movie star. You look at the way he carries Mad Max Fury Road, even though it's actually Charlize Theron's movie.
By the way, can I just say, I don't think... those words, quote, help me, I've had too many barefoots, have ever been uttered outside of a bridal shower. Okay, sorry.
Hey, I just think he's an interesting commodity. And
I do. That's why I wanted to see the movie. I said, oh, wow. This
he's not a character actor.
I'm so disappointed.
Although he has the soul of a character actor, but he is a leading man.
No, he's totally a character actor. I mean, look, what are his best movies, right? Dunkirk. Where he's behind a mask and in a cockpit the whole time, right? Except for that shot at the end where he kind of comes out in front of the burning. He was in Legend. Do you remember Legend, the movie about the Cray brothers where he plays...
I thought you were going to say Legend
brothers.
With Tom Cruise.
No. Where he basically... He does his actorly thing where he plays two characters and one of them, you know, has a different accent and, you know, one of them is slightly crazy and whatever. Locke, where he is like in a car by himself the entire time, which is probably his best movie, I think, as a leading man. He's in a bunch of things, where he's doing a bunch of different roles. He is almost by definition a character actor, right?
Yeah, except that he's also a movie star. This is what I'm saying. He's a very strange hybrid.
Is he?
I can't think of a lot of guys who are equivalent.
Philip Seymour Hoffman. I feel like he came up the other week, but Philip Seymour Hoffman.
I guess it's safe for me to talk about
him. Same mode, where he could do basically anything and was also occasionally the star, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. Or maybe Matt Damon.
Or maybe Matt, but Matt Damon is a much more traditional movie star, though, like the Bourne movies series. And.
Yeah.
Ocean's movies. And
it's early. Tom Hardy could carry.
Yeah. He was good in Mad. He was good in Mad Max Fury Road.
I don't think he has it in him to be a franchise star. I don't think he wants it.
Well, too bad, because Sony really needs Venom too.
I can only imagine the stuff he's doing on set to destroy that series. I don't envy Andy Serkis trying to direct that movie.
Yeah. You know what? I was thinking about Capone, and we shouldn't have been surprised because, they gave you a hint that, you know, he's losing his mind, but there could be $10 million buried somewhere in there, and you never get to it. No. Remember Al Capone's vaults? Do you remember that, JVL? That's before Sonny's time. I don't think
Geraldo.
Yeah. I am aware of it. I don't remember it. It was a total bust.
So there you go.
Doing Capone this week simply underscores for me that we need to do Never Ending Story next week. We need to do tying ourselves to terrible movies that are being shunted.
There was one thing that I thought if Gene were to come in here, the only thing he would say was Josh Trank, more like Josh Stank. That was it. Sorry. Anyway,
we need to concentrate on doing great movies that we love and have a lot to say about instead of being hidebound by there's this new crappy thing being pushed out on VOD because there's no content.
Which is shocking, by the way. However, two things, JVL. One, I just saw the email from Variety that there was a box office weekend for a movie called The Wretched.
The Wretched.
Which did something like, I'm looking at it here, $85,000 in 21 drive-ins.
Was that the number one movie in America?
Yes. Yeah. The Wretched. IFC's The Wretched. This is the second weekend in a row that The Wretched has been number one.
It's crushing it. It's got legs. What about the trailer? I saw the trailer for that Russell Crowe movie.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. I can't wait to go and get COVID to watch Unhinged.
So that's coming out in a theater, is that right? That's coming out in theaters. Okay.
So this is it's kind of an interesting story. The studio behind it.
I feel like it's been done.
The studio behind it, it's a $35 or $40 million movie starring Russell Crowe as basically in a falling down scenario crossed with
Maximum Overdrive. No.
Sleeping with the enemy.
Duel. You know. sort of situation, but the studio behind it had been bouncing around release dates because they kept getting bigfooted by bigger movies. So they just said, screw it, we're gonna do it July 4th weekend. We've got July 4th weekend all to ourselves. We're gonna do it. So that's gonna come out a couple weeks ahead of Tenet, and it'll be interesting to see A, how many theaters are open, and B, how many people are interested in going to see a random Russell Crowe action thriller type movie.
Yeah,
what they really needed was Taken 5. Taken 5 would have opened huge. That's the movie people want to see.
If John Wick 4 could come out, could you imagine what the money would look like?
Yeah,
So anyway, we should definitely do that. But you want to do the Never Ending Story
or a movie that Vic loves, or put up a Twitter poll tonight and let the listeners decide what we do.
Speaking of ten polls, so I was watching Taken, that was on recently, and that still holds up very well.
Well,
the original Taken is really very good, and I thought to myself, if I could almost put together enough funds to outbid that sheik. I'm kidding. I'm just trying to liven things up here. Sorry.
On the yacht.
I was kidding.
Can we talk about casinos?
Oh, yes. Okay. So, yes.
That's all I really want to talk about.
Okay, good. This is terrible news, but Sonny, why don't you go ahead and start things off?
MGM is talking about how they're going to reopen the casinos in Las Vegas, and it's a series of changes.
And that's a big casino, MGM. It's huge.
It's a series. Well, they have four or five casinos, though, right? Mm-hmm. They've got the Grand. Yeah, they've got the. I don't know. What else do they have there? They've got the Treasure Island. Is that an MGM?
Oh, it might be. I don't know. I had my bachelor party at MGM Grand. That's all I remember.
Anyway, they've got a bunch.
You remember?
from what I remember.
There are a number of jokes, but speaking of neurosyphilis, Sonny, Continue,
they're making
please.
They're making a lot of changes that they should have made years ago, which is like digital check-in, right? Like you don't have to stand in line to check in to the hotel, right?
Good, great.
And they're doing other things like social distancing at the card tables. God only knows how that's going to work. And nobody can stand behind you, you know, while you're playing blackjack.
Oh, all the buffets are closed.
All, you know, the slot machines, like every fifth slot machine is going to be working, you know, whatever. So
but you mean you can't do like two at the same time?
No.
Like certain friends of ours who we will not mention.
Yeah. So it's a fascinating mix of, oh, and they're getting rid of the buffets, no buffets,
yeah,
right?
That's terrible.
And
that's the worst news.
You know, and so it basically, I think JVL, you made this point that they're really doubling down on their core demographic, which is problem
degenerates.
Handlers.
Yes.
Degenerates.
Yes.
And look, here's the sad fact of the matter, right? Is that in all such businesses, in all gambling and liquor and other sorts of businesses, 10% of your customers give you 90% of your profits, right? Mm. That's what it comes down to.
Is that true?
So if
I don't know the answer to this. Is that really a true thing?
It sounds like it to me.
Yeah. I should qualify that by saying I don't actually know that that's the case for Vegas, which relies on a lot of, you know, tourism,
convention,
that sort of
tourism,
thing.
Right?
Yeah, it's much more diversified now.
But in
all that other
in
stuff.
Most, my understanding is that essentially in most businesses like this, 10% of your customers, 20% of your customers are giving you 90% of your profits. It's certainly true in the alcohol business. I know that for a fact in the alcohol business that like 10% of your customers, 20% of your customers, they're buying 90% of the product, more or less. So
they pulled one person. It was me.
I would assume it's a similar sort of thing with other addictive substances like gambling.
Yeah.
So anyway, Vic, when are you going back to Vegas?
I know. How are the craps tables going to work? I mean, you know, don't touch that dice.
Everybody gets their own dice.
Yeah. You can't
you
do that.
You don't get to roll dice anymore. They'll have a robot hand rolling the dice.
Well, I mean, it's like people play stuff like this online where, you know, you're relying on a computer to do the probability. That's insane. But I don't know how they'll do that because rolling the dice is everything.
What I thought about and what I think about a lot is not Vegas, but AC.
Oh.
Because Vegas has a lot of young customers. They get a lot of people who go to Vegas once a year because they're there for a convention and whatnot. I don't know what the average age of a gambler in Atlantic City is, but I guess it's 117. And they are all of these old people.
That's the average. That's the average.
With their oxygen tanks on a bus come down from New York with their Social Security checks.
Yeah.
These are the people for whom COVID-19 is like a death sentence. How is Atlantic City going to work?
Yeah, because it was already struggling.
But my understanding is that gambling in Atlantic City is basically already dead outside of like the Revel, right? What are the Wynn casinos?
No, Revel's gone. It's the Borgata.
The Borgata.
And then and then Tropicana 2.0, I guess. And Harrah's is still there, I think.
Did the Borgata sister casino? Because didn't they open like a second casino next to the
Borgata?
Maybe
they did. There was the Revel was there. The Revel died. And that was a huge property. But that's the big question, JVL, because it's all bad.
Yeah. So what killed Atlantic City gambling was Pennsylvania and the Indian tribes in Pennsylvania and then
New York too. And then New York did the same thing. New York.
But what that did was that sucked away I would say more of like the weekend crowd.
Mm-hmm.
The core, the people, the old biddies on their buses coming down, those people are still there. They just, you know, they only give you so much money, right? Mm-hmm. However, there are a lot of them and they will die. You know, they're there for the buffets. How is that going to work? How is Mohegan Sun going to work, right? These places where the clientele is much, much older.
Well, I don't know. Mohegan Sun
was a little younger, I think, right?
Yeah.
Mohegan was a little hipper.
I get that sense. Yeah, Mohegan and Foxwoods. Yeah.
Good luck.
But like all the like Indian casinos in California and all around there, like I just don't, I like.
Yeah, in California.
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. It would be nice if the white man didn't like kill the Native Americans with another plague. We've done that to their people once already.
Well, it didn't come from the white man, as you know, JVL. Okay, moving right along.
Victorino.
Corrections. Shout-outs.
Victorino.
Corrections, shout-outs. Sonny, you already gave the shout-out to Chris. Anything else? No? Okay. And once again, thank you to Paul Crookston for that great ad read for Tommy John. Okay. Well, that's all the time we're giving to this episode, then. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments. Tweet us at Sonny Bunch, at Victorino Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. Just type in Subbeacon at a podcast. We're there. Leave a review. Tell your friends. Until next time. Sonny, I'm so glad you're in better spirits now.
Yeah, I feel better. I'm glad the lockdown is ending. You know, I'm going to go get a haircut this week.
It's exciting.
Wear a mask, get a haircut.
It'll be wild if you did the full thing, you know, got a haircut and then shaved, you know, mustache and beard. That would be wild.
No,
you'd be a different person.
I don't want to do that. No. How are you guys doing? I feel like we didn't really dive into the casino topic enough. Yeah. I feel like
Is there anything
I feel
else?
Like, yeah. Vic, what are you going to do at a casino if you can't be the life of the craps table?
Well, I mean, that's the whole point.
Like,
because
blow on my dice, lady. Just come on, let's do it.
Vote for me.
I know. I love
Vic for president.
What I loved is going on a. Oh man, I mean, at some point it'll all be
it's going on.
It'll come back, okay? It'll come back because this is this, you know, it's like the bubonic plague or something, the Black Death. We could get through this one.
Careful.
But, okay, fine. But, you know, it is what it is. But when it comes back, I loved, for example, when we were like on the standard cruises, and I remember that first one in 2005 and playing craps, and I got on that hot streak. And I think I went between 15 and 20 minutes before I crapped out. And I remember, you remember that crazy guy, there was a crazy guy named Fast Eddie who was like a NASCAR guy. He wasn't even part of the standard cruise. And he I made him like $3,000, you know, in 15 minutes, you know, and everyone's cheering and, you know, everybody loves you. That's what it is for. I am not one of these people who like, leave me alone. I want to hide in the corner and play a machine. And that is in my nature, just to be around people and that sort of positive energy. So I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe when the person
casinos are a place where I often see positive energy.
You see it from me. and when I, you know, I imagine maybe what you could do is, you know, when you start rolling the dice, when you crap out, then you can, just, you know, get new dice and, which they always do anyway to throw things off when you're doing well. And then they can disinfect the other dice. And that'll be fine.
I got a little something for you boys.
What do you got?
Kind of funny. So G Money has been, I would say, the least well adapted to lockdown life. Doesn't like it. Misses his little kinder preschool.
I was
gonna
say, so he
class.
Still has a sort of a memory of like what that, you know, what it's missing out on.
Yeah, okay. And he's like a pain in the ass who wants attention all the time because he's three. This is what you remember, Vic, right? So we're doing breakfast for dinner, as we do six or seven nights a week, and he is sitting on the deck the other night, and I've just put him through the bath before breakfast for dinner, and breakfast for dinner is waffles and sausage, and so, of course, his entire chest is coated in maple syrup, meaning we're going to have to do another bath before bedtime. He's sitting there, and he goes, "Dad, can I get some more syrup, please?" I said, no, not getting you more syrup. "Why not? I want more syrup." I said, "Because look, your whole body is covered in syrup." And he looks down and goes, "Oh." And he takes his piece of waffle and just rubs it up and down his chest and pops it in his mouth.
That's problem solving. Good for him. Like a monkey.
I'm sure it's fine.